Good evening, everybody. We are approaching Parshas Vayetze. Famously, Yaakov is tricked into marrying not one wife, but two wives. He wanted to marry Rachel, and we know that he wakes up next to Leah. Let's try to learn a little bit about that. It'll have tremendous ramifications on some of the most sensitive shilohs in halacha. You marry one person, and you find that it's really a different person. Oh, Agunos, very good. So Dr. Karp, as usual, a few steps ahead of the game. So let's start slow. Yehav Yaakov es Rachel. So Yaakov had a natural love for Rachel. Now, you pointed this out a couple weeks ago, Robert, that Rav Hirsch, although he had a beautiful essay about Yitzchak and Rivka, that Judaism, we don't believe in the romance, blah, blah, blah. But here, you pointed out, sharp as a knife, before Yaakov and Rachel had a meaningful relationship, there is a ahava. So there's what to talk about there. Okay, that being said, Vayomer Evodcha Sheva Shanim B'Rachel Bitcha Haktana. So how many ways does Yaakov describe Rachel? I want to serve you, Lavan. 7 years, I'll work for you. For Rachel, your daughter, the young one. Very odd, right? But not clear enough. All right, what does Rashi say? Kol HaSiman HaMalul Lama. Why did Yaakov feel the need to elaborate so extensively? He understood who he was dealing with. That Lavan was a trickster. So, Amar lo e'evodcha b'Rachel. I want to work for you on behalf of marrying your daughter Rachel. B'shem etov Rachel acheres min ha'shuk. You're going to tell me that I'm referring to a different Rachel. A Rachel from the shuk, from the marketplace. No. Tamar lomar bitcha. I'm talking about your daughter Rachel. B'shem etomer achlif l'leya shma ve'akor shma Rachel. So I know you, Lavan. What are you going to do? You're going to call Leah Rachel. You're going to switch names. So I'm going to marry your daughter Rachel, i.e. the one that used to be called Leah. No. So that's why, what does he modify by saying? Haktana, the young one. It didn't work. In the end of the day, Lavan still figured out a way to trick Yaakov. Hey, what happens? So, oh gosh, in the next morning, Yaakov wakes up and it's Leah. What'd you do to me? I was working on behalf of Rachel, not Leah. Why'd you trick me? So that's that. And look at this. Vahi be'erev vayikach es Leah bito vayavo osa elav vayavo elav. So we have to figure out, there's an etziv. A couple of sources here that directly address the shaila of what? How in the blazes can the Torah consider Yaakov Avinu married to Leah? What is that called in halacha? Ketushei Tos. Right? If you buy something and it's not really what you bought, you go to the person who sold it to you and say, it's a Mekach Tos. Even if years later you find that there's a real flaw in the item, I want my money back. It was a faulty sale. A Mekach Tos. So marriage is the same thing. So you make a kinyan on a woman, assuming that you're buying, slash marrying the woman, right? Meaning it's compared to a legally bonding, monetary transaction. Obviously, we don't want to say that in a derogatory fashion. Obviously, there's a tremendous kedusha, and obviously, it goes without saying. But on a halachic level, so the dinim are equated. So new. Anyone want to come up with an answer why this is not a kedusha tos? Why was this not a faulty sale in the same way that a person says, well, I'm selling you, a Tesla, and it's really, a Dodge Caravan. why is that bothering, no? So how are Leah and Yaakov married? Are they married? That's a good question. We like the kasha. Never thought of it. Oh, that's good. I like that. All right. Well, you could argue that none of this really matters. This is before Matan Torah. I mean, the dry halachic answer is this is called like Tanakh before Matan Torah, and we don't need to be so sympathetic to halacha. Like it's just not the way they operated. So our Torah law does not really apply to the same degree, at least. But the Rishonim really asked this kasha. All right. So we'll pick up on a couple of things. The Chizkuni, again, already in the 13th century in France. V'ha hayu la kedushei taos. So the Chizkuni, one of the most famous commentators on the Torah, Ask this exact kasha. To savar shehi Rachel. How is the kedushin binding if in fact Yaakov thought it was Rachel? V'yesh lomar misheyeda shehi Leah ba'al l'shem kedushin. What a wild chiddush! Once Yaakov understood that it really was Leah, he reconnected with her for the sake of marriage. Meaning, really, the marriage that took place at the wedding night was not binding. And the next night, or thereabout, when they revisited one another and reconnected, that was when the marriage was really, quote-unquote, consummated. And that's really, the second time, not the first time, that really made them become married. Wow. Now, that's a pretty big chiddush, no? To say that they weren't married right away. Because according to the Chizkuni, what could Yaakov... Right, what's going on? Meaning, according to the Chizkuni, technically speaking, Yaakov could have walked away. Because he could have woken up the next morning and said, I'm not married to this woman. I never married her. He went back and decided to continue the relationship. That is a fascinating question, according to the Chizkuni, why Yaakov would want to do that.
The second time he had das.
Exactly. Right. So, he das and therefore what?
So, therefore it took hold.
Yeah, exactly. Right. But that's still a big chiddush. That he, Chizkuni kind of, thickened the plot there. A little bit of a chiddush to kind of add that onto the story. And now there is a parish of the Riva on the Torah. I was not familiar with this parish. I have a sefer at home called Otzer Mefarshei Hapshat, which basically has every question you could ever ask on every pasuk in the Torah. So I was praying this shiur today, and I'm like, I got to check out the Otzer Mefarshei Hapshat because I prepared a whole halachic shiur, and I'm like, I need more on the actual psukim. So they quoted the Chizkuni, which I looked up, and they quoted the Riva. And it is on Bar Ilan, they have the Riva. Now, in Tosvos, in like Shas, there's the Riva. So apparently this is not the same Riva. There are two Rivas. It should be noted. At the same time, this is a contemporary of the Poskim, of the Tosvos. I mean, we're talking about very, very early Rishonim, also 1300s. And he quotes Rabbeinu Tam, Vikshu Rabbeinu Tam. Heya chayu kedushei leya kedushin. Have kedushei tos. Same kasha the Chizkuni. So now the Riva is asking, Shai b'dayto l'kadish Rachel, v'lavan masur l'leh b'makom Rachel. And he quotes Harav El-Yakim. I don't know, I did some research on the Riva. It says that he was a Talmud, I think, of Rav El-Yakim. Now what do you do if you don't know who Rav El-Yakim is? So I didn't do enough research, Adam. But again, we'll leave this to Stuart Rubin when he listens to Stuart. If you're listening out there on Yitoya, let me know the historical background. So what's that Rav El-Yakim's pshat? She Yaakov haya yorei miramoso shalavan. Yaakov, as we already saw in Rashi, was no fool. He understood that Lavan was going to try at least to trick him. So therefore what? Even at the wedding, he said, you know what? Lavan's going to try to trick me and outsmart me. He's going to try to somehow put Leah under the chuppah instead of Rachel. So when Yaakov married Rachel, he had the following thought process. Imzos Rachel, you kedushin. When he got married the first time. Thank you for clarifying. So when he at the wedding night, under the chuppah, he said, if this is Rachel, I'm marrying Rachel. Vim yachif li Rachel aleya, yehe l'shem leya. So as opposed to the Chizkuni, who says that they had to kind of reconnect for the marriage to be binding, the Riva saying, no, at the original marriage, Yaakov understood that there was a chance this was not really Rachel. And he had in mind, I don't want to have, intimate relations for no reason. I don't want what's called my bia to be a bia zinus. I want it to be a productive, act. So I have in mind that even if this is not even Rachel, I have in mind for this to be for the sake of marriage. Just so that my physical relations don't end up being for no use. I mean, you don't want to kind of do that level of intimacy for no reason. That's called the biasnus. And therefore, Yaakov actually had in mind that this, if this is Leah, the marriage still works. Wow.
Can I ask
so,
a question?
Yeah, of course.
I think you're working
for. Okay. What'd you do to me, yeah? Yeah, why'd you trick me good? Right. Right.
He's getting it back.
Right, so Lavan is working another 7 years. You got Rachel also, yeah. Ah, so right there. So Jerome says, this Pashup shot is that when Yaakov agrees to continue working for the sake of Rachel, implicitly he's agreeing to marrying Leah there.
They might want, but after that.
Very good. That's the third. That's the Netziv. So Jerome is Machavid in the Netziv. What does the Torah say when at an evening Yaakov takes Leah into his tent? Vayavo osa elav vayavo eleha. As opposed to what? As a vayavo, again, the Torah says black on white that what? Vayavei osa elav. Sorry, thank you for the correction. Vayavei osa elav. He brought her to him. But what word is missing? Leisha. When Yaakov marries Rachel, in Pasuk Chaf Ches, the Torah says the added word Leisha, meaning she came to him as a wife.
So he has to say that because he can't be Mekadosh.
Very good. So, the Ba'osa Shah Vade Lahaisa Leisha. Wait. So before that, hold on. So the Netziv is pointing out that when the Torah describes the initial connection, the union between Yaakov and Leah, it does not use the word Isha. You know why? Deba'osa Shah Vade Lohaisa Leisha. Because they were not yet married. You know why? Kozman Shalah Yadav Lo Nisratza Yaakov Leah. All the while that Yaakov did not know it was really Leah, and he did not kind of give in, they weren't married. So exactly what Jerome said. It was a process. I mean, an original marriage, nothing took place halachically. He didn't know who the woman was. The Riva. The Riva says that he had in mind at the time. That's a huge.
It doesn't disagree with it.
Right. I mean, no. Correct. Right. You have to say the process started on that. Yeah. The Chizkuni is the only one who would say that that the wedding night was like a zero. And then Netziv is also saying, the Chizkuni and then Netziv are saying the wedding night was a zero. There was nothing doing that night. You know why? Because he had no idea who she was. Elamai, eventually when he understood who it was, so that it settled in. So you have this awkward no man's land, according to the Chizkuni and the Netziv, where like they weren't really married yet, but then when he agreed to it, it worked somehow. So, you know, again, you could really try to figure out exactly what the pshat over here is. But ultimately, what we see from the Torah is that when Yaakov... Oh, very good. So that's the shayla. Very good. Retroactively, did that work? Very good. So here you have a man who literally did not know what he was getting himself involved with. So again, it is true that the Rivah said he had in mind, maybe it's Leah. But then Siv all of a sudden opens up our mind that, you know what? You can marry someone thinking it's really Rachel and it's really Leah, but then like eventually say, you know what, it's fine. You can kind of like get over it. I mean, get over it. So the Chizkuni says you can't just get over it. You have to reconnect. The Chizkuni said you have to go again. You have to reconnect physically in order to be married because the first night was a nothing. As opposed to the Netziv saying, no, like the first night seemingly did something, and you know maybe you know once Yaakov agreed to it, it kind of like you know clicked. Maybe retroactively. So there's a question in the Midrash already. Why did Yaakov not divorce Leah? Wow, the real shaila. The Ramban quotes this Midrash, and here's the Midrash inside. Chanan Mishem of Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak Amar. When Yaakov saw that Leah gave in to this plot, Leah was guilty. Lavan was guilty. He was the one who set it up, but Leah was equally guilty. Why did Leah go along with it? Why didn't Leah say it's very, very inappropriate for me to steal my sister's fiance?
Wasn't Rachel also in...
Very good. So there's a little bit of perish. And it's not so clear that Rachel was such a tzaddikas. Right? We our Masorah is that what? That Rachel was such a tzaddikas for not wanting to embarrass her sister, so she gave her the signs. That's really nice for Leah to not be embarrassed. And who's the victim? Yaakov is still the victim. Right? It was really nice. You didn't want to embarrass your sister. What about, like, the man who you could have maybe told him? Like, you know. Right, so very good, very good. So, very good. Very good, very good. So, but in the Midrash, Chazal, this is our tradition, Chazal say that Leah was criticized by Yaakov, or at least, you know, negatively viewed upon because she went along with this negative plot. But then Yaakov understood that Hashem was giving her all these wonderful children. And the lashon here is what? Le'iman shel elu ani magaresh. What, to the mother of these children I should divorce? Meaning, divinely, Yaakov was being told, this is what Hashem wants. You don't divorce Reuven's mother, Shimon's mother, Levi's mother. I mean, this woman is capable. Oh, very good, very good, very good. So you have to figure this midrash out on a timeline. But Chazal are teaching us that when Yaakov understood that there was immense Kedusha, then the Shiftei Ka emerged from this union, that was plenty of reason to not divorce her. Okay, yeah.
I have a question that's, I think someone who is just looking at this surface level doesn't know anything about Judy might say, during that entire time from the marriage to night, during that one point, you realize that this was not love.
So, you know what? You know, one of the Rishonim, who I just quoted, asked that question. And it's a fantastic question. Of course, it's a fantastic question. I cut it out. I didn't want to put it in because it deals with, laws of intimacy. And it specifically says the point is that Yaakov was very tsanua, that he didn't engage in chatter or any other activity during that night. Because obviously, if he would have been, more elaborate, so to speak, he would have understood more about the identity of the person. So it speaks to Yaakov's sneers. That's my answer. What do you think? Take it or leave it. What do you think? Okay. Is it satisfactory or no?
Or even
just physically.
Just seeing the face.
It was just seeing the face. It was so dark, right? Right. Yeah. Yep. This is a good kashya. They look like sisters. Yeah. These are good conscious. But then looking like, who says that they were twins? Because the Torah makes the discrepancy dafka by the eyes, meaning they were identical except for the fact that Leah's eyes were, so maybe that would explain it. But I don't know if that's like a legitimate thing. I don't know if that's like a Torah I heard or like, one of these things that I shouldn't have heard. I don't know. I don't know if it's like a classic Marbanel or like something very wrong. I'd have to look. But I heard that once. I don't know from a Jew, from a non-Jew, from. I don't quote me on that yet. Okay, so let's go weiter. So let's try to talk about the very, very real halacha that we're kind of dancing around over here, and this is about kedushei tovs. So Chazal and Maseches Ketubot speak about the following case. So let's say a man is born with, a man shenoldu lo mumin. After they get married, a man has certain defects all of a sudden. So ha'ish shenoldu bo mumin ein kofin osa lahosi. And Amar Shem Galil, the man that remember mumin ha'ketanim. Aval be mumin gedolim kofin osa lahosi. So let's say you get married, right? Then the question is, all of a sudden the wife discovers that there's some very, very, uncomplimentary details, that happened after the wedding. So now the question is, can the woman demand a divorce? Can the woman demand a divorce? So there's machlokas in the Gemara. Does this mean she knew about it before the wedding, or does this mean that it only emerged after the wedding? Right? There's a huge difference, right? Meaning if she knew about it before the wedding, so that means she agreed to it and she got married. If it only happened after the wedding, so that's much more of a legitimate argument where she had no idea. She had no idea that this man had five arms. He was hiding, she only saw two of them on the dates, and he was hiding his other three arms under his shirt. And all of a sudden, after the wedding, he's like, whoa, this guy, he's got five arms. Hidden, yeah, is a better word. Okay. Or emerged, okay. So this is the sugya in Maseches Ketubot Ayin Zayin about people who hide things from other things. And it's really Shulchan Aruch. So let's just have a clear halachic literature over here. It's in Shulchan Aruch. And Ezer, Hechos Gidin, Simin, Kufin, and Dalet. Halach Aleph. Eilu shekofin osam lahotzi v'litein ketubos. So the following men are mamish coerced by Beis Din to divorce their wives. We demand that they give a get to their wife. Mishano let lo reach hapeh. So Robert's wife calls me up and said, Rabbi, I had no idea he had such bad breath. When we say reach hapeh, we don't mean like, brush your teeth. Apparently it's like some irrevocable issue. So there's a machlokas. Let's just say it was discovered. Let's go with Jerome's pshat. Ha'ish shenoldu lo mumin. That they were discovered. So meaning after the wedding, she discovered it. Obviously, right, right. Obviously, a woman who marries a man and then, like, he, Rachmana Leslan, has, like, a fatal, whatever, she can just, like, walk away. So, let's say this, I think discovered is an appropriate translation. So, nolad lo, right now, again, literally the word nolad would not suggest that it was discovered, but rather, like, it emerged. That's why it translated as emerged. But all of a sudden, let's say she finds out that he's got awful breath or reach achotem, some nasal issue. It's very repulsive. Osha chazerles mekabit tsoas klavim. He deals with dog feces or borsiki. He's a tanner. He smells awful. And all these ways, she can't stand him. She can't. So you know what? We force the guy to give a get to his wife. And here's a key line. Vimrutz teishivim bala. But if she wants, she can stay married. She can choose to stay involved with the marriage. And remain loyal. But if she already knew before the wedding, and she figured, you know, I'll put up with it, and then after the wedding, she said, no, ain kofin lozi. We don't force the man to give his wife a get. The savra of a kabbalah. She knew what she was signing up for. She made a conscious decision. Okay, granted, she might not have understood the magnitude of her commitment, but that's her problem. So it's only an issue when it's like really a curveball out of left field. She had no idea, and it's unexpected. Oh, yeah, yeah. All right, now there are other cases. We're going to get to a little bit more of a sensitive, practical tone. Omer eini zan veini mefanis. So you have a nut job of a husband. Says, I'm not going to feed my wife. I'm not going to give her any money. So kofin oso lezen. Based in says, no, you got to support your wife. The main based in yecholim la kofin lezen. Based in ineffective because lemaisa said the guy doesn't have anything to give her. So he doesn't have money or whatever it is. He doesn't want to get a job. He's mamish, just incapable of supporting his wife. So if she wants out of the marriage, kofin oso lahotzi miyad v'litei ksuba. We say get, you know, give her a get, and you owe her the ksuba money. V'chein adin l'mishenu rotza l'shamish. And similarly, a man who's not loyal to his wife in the bedroom, that's grounds for dismissal. Where basically can say give her a get, you know, and give her the ksuba. And here is where we get to the halacha in Shulchan Aruch about domestic violence. Rachman of the son. V'chein ish ragel l'chos lahotzi ishto mibeisu tamid. Let's say a man has such a temper that he regularly throws his wife out of the home. Kofin osolahotzi. Beistin says, give your wife a get now. Give her a get. Kayadei, you know, zana lefamim, uporish menu, betash mishmin. You could assume if the man's so crazy that he throws his wife out of the house, there are probably other issues involved with the relationship. You know, let's just say it's safe to assume it. Okay, now here is black on white. Ish hamake ishto. A man who hits his wife. A very hibiado, it's a severe, severe sin. Kemake chaveru, just like any Jew who hits another Jew. Imragil hubakach, and if there's literally a regularity, a chronic issue of domestic abuse, yesh biad beistin liyasro. So beistin can fight fire with fire, so they can hit him. Ulachrimu lahalkos of a chol minoi ridoi vikvir. You don't want to know what that looks like. But let's just say it's you know, the based in mafia can hunt this guy down. Again, we don't use this, in at least, you know, our community is not our style, so to speak. And essentially, we can make him give his wife a get. And there's some certain, subtleties to that law. So, all in all, there's a concept on the books known as based in can force a man to give his wife a get. Because she does not have to put up. She never signed up for this. She never. And Rachman al-Assan, it happens. My mother's a social worker. You know, I don't know names. I don't know details. But I do know the stories of my mother's clients. And we used to talk about the problems in the Jewish community. And unfortunately, in my own profession, and whether it's chinuch or whatever it is, you know, these things come up. And you know about unfortunate realities. And there are women who need to put up with things that they never intended to sign up for. And the question is, can you force the husband to give a get? And this is very much related to Aguna Shilas and a question that I asked none other than Rabbi Shlomo Weissman in a smicha class when he represented the Beis Din of America. So Peter's own son, Rabbi Shlomo Weissman. Wow. We're going to quote your son. Full circle. Peter's like, all right, I'm out of here. Intimidating, you know. All right, so, so here's what I want to point out. Something that didn't make any sense to me is the following. What do you mean that if the woman finds out that the guy's a nut job, we force the husband to give her a get, and she could stay loyal if she wants to? Why don't we say they're just not married? They're not married. Why are we being so apologetic? Well, because he's a psychopath, we force him to give a get. Who's just, why are they married? Why are they halakhically married? She thought he was married, you know, she thought he was Yaakov. And he's really Leah, so to speak. You know what I mean? Meaning it's a Kedusha Tos. Oh, so says Dr. Karp, no. She thought he was Reuven, and he's Reuven. And for 10 seconds after the marriage, he was Reuven. And it took until 20 seconds to realize that he was a nut job. So based on those 10...
If you knew the person was a nut job, and you still stay with the person,
you would jah. So you're saying she understood he was a nut job, and
or she...
She didn't act immediately. She didn't call 911 the first second. So that's the point. So says Dr. Karp, it's all about her initial response. But if she is at all tolerant, then the marriage is not void. Yeah, Jerome.
You asked whether or not you can just
extrajudicially null the marriage. Because he's crazy. Oh.
Very good.
Very good. So says Jerome, there was a rational, you can't deny the fact that there was a rational decision there, right? So even though there were some very unpleasant realities that emerged that were hidden, so is that rational? Let's say he was... But what does the contract say? That Yaakov married Rachel, and she's really, you know what I'm saying? You hear the kasha. But yeah, so Jerome's answer is correct. I'm playing devil's advocate intentionally to point out that it's not so clear to me why the contract is binding. So the Aruch HaShulchan is the one who spells that even more clearly, like Jerome and Adam. B'chol eilu ha'dvarim einanu kofin of so ligarsha rak kisho tovat geirushin. When she finds out that he's a nut, we only make him divorce her if she wants to get divorced. Avalim ratzta leishev imbala lo machinin ba. We don't make them get divorced. You know, she says, listen, I thought he was normal. To my unpleasant surprise, he has 14 personalities. But okay, I'll settle. You know, whatever, he feeds me. He's got a nice job. He's nice. All 14 of his personalities are one guy is nicer than the next. You know, I'll deal with it, right? You know? So it's, to me, that's jarring. Because I would have said, what do you mean? They need to reconnect. Like the Chizkuni said. On the first night of the wedding, they mamish were not the same. They were not even aware of who they were. So if you want to remain married, you have to do it again. And this is more like the Netziv. Like, okay, the first night, not all the details were really in place. But like over time, marriage kind of sinks in retroactively kind of thing. Like, let it settle. So here's where we're going to deal with an extreme shaila of when do we actually not require a get at all and just say, well, your mom is just say you were never really married in the first place. Because the unfortunate reality is that there are times where a woman marries a psycho and she cannot get the get that she needs. And you need to rely on people like Rabbi Shlomo Weissman, Peter's son, and figure out how in the world to save this woman. Because sometimes not all 14 personalities are such a bubble. And sometimes we need to save women. And this is Shiloh was in Rishon, known as the Or Zeruah, and he had a correspondence with the Rabbeinu Simcha. And there the case was a woman agreed to marry a man. She never met the man. They married through Shlichus, a messenger. And unbeknownst to her, the man was blind. So the Shiloh is, are they married? And Rabbeinu Simcha actually tells the Or Zeruah that, you know, there was a little bit of a misrepresenting of what my opinion was. But I actually held, says Rabbeinu Simcha, that I never even married in the first place. That afilu get lohaisa tzricha im lo yadam mum ze shebebachor. If she did not know that he was blind, the marriage never even took place in the first place. It was so out of left field, such an unpredicted curveball, that they're not even married. Not even married. Wow. So all of a sudden on the books, we have such an extreme example of a case where the marriage was never even binding in the first place. Here's where we get to very sensitive practical shilas.
So the one yeah. Had
yes.
Blind,
very good. Exactly. Yes, very good. So the what was on the books very clearly in the Shas and Shulchan Aruch is when do we force the guy to give a get? What was less clear is it ever okay to not require a get? Yeah, for basically to say, you're good, your marriage is void, you don't need a get, you're free to go marry another man. So it's not on the books until we got to Rabbeinu Simcha. Now Rabbeinu Simcha is dealing with a case where they didn't do Nisuin, they only did Kiddushin. They only, agreed to get married, there was a ring maybe exchanged, but they never actually went through with the marriage. And Rav Moshe deals with a case... Well, Kiddushin, yeah, very good. Most people agree like Leo. Very good, very good. All right, I'm just saying, all right. For the sake of time, we'll just go on. Because Leo's right. Because Rav Moshe agrees with you that here's the Shiloh. Very, very sensitive Shiloh. And the Chelek Aleph Simon Pei of Rav Moshe Feinstein Zev and Ezra Shelis Juvas. He's referring to a Zev Drazen. Okay, what's the case? It's a case from Baltimore. A woman got married in a Suin. And what happened after she got married? So, you know what happened? He disappeared. That's exactly right. Very good, Adam. How'd you know that? Yeah, very good. Adam's like, I was that man. the man ran away from Baltimore to Fairland. The man ran away and was hiding. And he was literally, when we say a nut job, I mean like literally. He was mamish, he was schizophrenic or who knows what. And he was so mentally ill that they went to the house to try to get him to write a get. And the father of this husband said, you can't come near my son. He's too ill. And I don't want him to interact with any of the humans because it could make his condition even worse. She was Rachmana Lathan and Aguna for 14 years, this woman. She married a man who ran away from home. And he was mamish a crazy person. And by the way, Rav Moshe was not the first person to deal with such a child. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, same child. I don't know if it's the same case, seemingly not, but the Imam is things happen. And all of a sudden, you know what happened? Rav Moshe paskened that no get is required. This is what's called a mum gadol, meaning this blemish is much worse than foul breath and whatever it is. Yeah, it probably took 14 years for them to... That's a good question. I don't know. This is the olden days. I don't know. They probably tried it for a long time to get a get before they... I don't know. It's a very fair question, unfortunately. But he wrote that he's a shota, and therefore you can say this kiddushei taos, never married in the first place. And there's a similar shota right before that. And then in Chelek Dalet of Ezer, he deals with the case of a man who was, let's just say, sleeping... instead of with his wife, was sleeping with another man. So if a woman gets married to a man, and, a very sensitive problem there is that the man is more interested in other men, so you have a real problem in that marriage. And Rav Moshe also said that if there's an effort to make things work, it's one thing. But here the man was not only a homosexual, he was literally unloyal, unfaithful to his own spouse, and doing something with another man. So here also, Rav Moshe paskin, that marriage never was in effect in the first place, and she could go remarry to another man without a get. But here's where he writes something fascinating. Ach, im efshar lahasig get sarich, nishtadel b'chol mai de efshar lahasig get kasher. She should still try to put in every effort to try to get a get from this man. Meaning, we don't just make a very quick, flippant decision to say, yeah, they're not really married. It's fine. Go get married. Go find a new husband. Because he writes, even if this man cheated on his wife with another man, if it's not a regular occurrence, it's not like a frequent, chronic issue, all right, so people make mistakes. So you can't just quickly say, oh, it's a kedushei taos. Whoa. So although we have this concept on the books in the Rishonim and Rav Moshe and other poskim, that you can actually point to a marriage and say, that is such a large red flag that they were never really married in the first place, we don't like to say it. And that's what I asked of Shlomo Weissman and Smicha. We were talking about an Aguna case, and Shlomo Weissman's saying all these crazy cases, all this stuff. So I raised my hand and I said, do we ever actually say that something's a kiddushei taos? And he basically said no. He basically said, like, unless it's like really, really extreme, like one of these cases, we don't just say kiddushei taos. Why? Where is the Shlomo Weissman coming from? From Rav Hershel Schechter. Rav Schechter has an article on Torah Web where unfortunately there were some Rabbanim who were too loose in invoking this heter. And he actually quotes Reb Ben Chaim, right, the holy Sfardi Rosh Yeshiva, famous Sfardi Rosh Yeshiva of YU. And he said, unfortunately, about 25 years ago, that many Rabbanim kind of like loosely try to free up Agunos. And it's not a simple thing. It's true, people like Rav Adya Yosef, Rav Willig, Rav Ejachter, they really are good at freeing up Agunos. But sometimes people like to just free an Aguna, and they're too quick to just assume that she was never really married in the first place. And what Rav Ben Chaim said was that he said there's a mistake of these batidining, and he cautions the aguna not to rely on these meaningless heterim. And let's just say agunos is a very sensitive issue, but you can't just assume that there's kedusha tells. So there's a whole lumdus that Rav Shechter is dealing with, is that people wanted to compare the das one has in the darim to the das one has in marriage, and the same way you could do hataras in the darim, you could also easily annul a marriage. And they're not the same level of das. And you know, we have more time to really learn this bi'iyun. We can just point out that the level of knowledge and intent one has during marriage is not the same level of intent one has in a different area of halacha. So you can't compare apples and oranges. So even though we can easily do hataras nedarim to annul a vow, you can't just annul a marriage. They don't work the same way. So yeah.
So is it different? Okay, you said the guy is unfaithful to the heart of another man. Is that different from if he's unfaithful to the heart of another woman?
Yeah, seemingly it is different. Seemingly it is different.
Is that what you think?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. 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 Here, it's like seemingly the idea is like it's so. Yeah. All right. So you're very, very sensitive, Shilas, and it should never be shayach. But at the same time, you know, something it's a wild sugya that's certainly meant to the parsha. And we should all be zocha to do our job in marriage, be consistent and loyal. We should all be zocha to live peaceful lives. Have a wonderful.